Now the Buddhist mandalas, we may say, represent this integration, or are a symbol of this integration on the highest possible level, which is the level of complete or supreme enlightenment. And the fact that enlightenment can be thought of, can be conceived, can be pictured in this way, shows that enlightenment isn't just a blank, featureless, inert sort of state, something just negative. Usually when you speak about nirvana or you speak about enlightenment, people get the impression of, well, how dreary, a sort of just void, something, a great empty hole, as it were, in which you tumble headlong, and this is enlightenment, a great blank, there's nothing there. After all, you're told there's no body there's no mind there, no thought there, no speech there. So what is there? It seems a rather dreary sort of place, rather like the Christian heaven, in a sublimated sort of way. But really enlightenment isn't like that. And the tantras and the symbol of the mandala make this clear. Enlightenment, conceived or pictured in this way, is a state, if you like, a beauty, of harmony, even of colour. It's much better to think that enlightenment or nirvana is red or blue or green than that it is just a state of nothing. It's much better to picture it pictorially than to picture it just as it were negatively. So this mandala also represents, also symbolizes the fact that enlightenment is like this, a state of beauty, as I said, harmony, colour, spiritual life and spiritual activity, not just a dull, inert state. And it's very interesting to note that historically speaking, the mandala, or the mandala symbol, arose at a very critical state or stage in the history of Indian Buddhism. At the very end of the Mahayana period, the beginning of the Vajrayana period, that is when the mandala, as were, emerged on the stage of Buddhist history. So why? What had happened? In those days, the last days of the dominance of the Mahayana, the teaching, Buddhism itself, had become very much over-intellectualized. It had retreated into the big monastic universities. You got 14,000 monks studying, going through the old academic routine, places like Nalanda and so on, studying text, writing commentaries, debating, refining the principles of logic and so on. And in this way, the whole teaching, the whole tradition became very, very much over-intellectualized and very over-conceptualized. So the mandala, at this point, this stage, when Buddhism itself in India seemed to have lost contact with its own sources, when it became too intellectual, too much an affair of the conscious mind, at this point, at this stage, the mandala, it seems, arose or emerged and became a means of integration, of reintegration for Buddhism itself. The tantras really represent a sort of rebirth of Buddhism. Not a corruption or degeneration, as many people think, without even studying these traditions, but really a rebirth, a renaissance, by establishing contact once again with the primordial depths, contact with which had been lost. So the mandala, in one or another of its forms, can do the same for us even today. The mandala isn't just an exotic symbol, isn't just something which floats in from the east with all the colours of the east upon it, as it were. The mandala represents, or reflects, if you like, processes which are going on within each one of us all the time, certainly within all those who are attempting in any way to lead any sort of spiritual life, to achieve any sort of understanding of themselves and the universe in which they live. Like the wheel of life, the great Tibetan wheel of life, the mandala also represents, or is, a picture of the contents of our own mind.